way to start this off, considering your many travels. Is exactly where am I speaking to you from right now? Where are you?
Well, this is kind of embarrassing. I mean, recently I was, you know, diving with orcas in Norway and in extremely cold water and temperatures, and all of a sudden now I've just landed myself at the Ritz-Carlton in Half Moon Bay in California. I'm speaking. I did the keynote address last night at the World Ocean Summit, which was a pretty influential crowd in the room, so a good chance to talk to people about the issues I care about.
What is the response in a room like that? I mean, obviously, there you do have a certain audience that has an interest in your work, but you know, what is the response when you do talk to individuals like that?
Well, I mean, the response to a group like last night is phenomenal. I mean, the only thing you have to be careful with an audience like that is, A, I mean, it's all the top scientists are there, and, you know, politicians, people who know this issue, climate change, loss of sea ice, to know that issue extremely well. So you have to make the talk fun and entertaining, but also just drive home what we stand to lose when we lose ice. But the night before that, I was in two places, Omaha and Dayton, Ohio, speaking about climate change. And that was, I liked that challenge. It was a fun challenge to try and really reach an audience like that. And they were incredibly receptive in Dayton, Ohio, for example. It was a good experience as well.
And when you talk about trying to make these types of understanding your audience and making sure that the material does keep them somewhat captivated, can we expect to see from you at Kleinhans when you come to Buffalo next week?
Well, I think what I do with my talks is, I mean, if anyone points their finger at you and says you should do this, I mean, that makes you put up a wall. It's, you know, polarizing. So what I do is I tell a lot of fun, self-deprecating stories of all the dumb things that I've done getting the images. And I think what makes my stuff work is that I don't have to sit there and beat a drum saying, you know, I have credibility. I mean, my credibility comes from growing up with the Inuit and seeing, I've bared witness to change firsthand over the last 25 years since I was a kid living in the North, and using my camera to document that change. And then to go on and be a biologist really helps me with my credibility as well, that I'm not just sort of this person who's just spewing out facts that aren't supported, and everything I talk about is supported by scientific facts. So once that's established, I can go ahead and make the talk fun and interesting. I can weave a story and take people underwater, so they're in the water with narwhals and beluga whales and then endangered bowhead whales, and then up in my ultralight airplane looking out over the sea ice and being close to walrus, and then they get to see leopard seals face to face. And I've never really had, the only criticism I've had lately is that someone thought I wasn't, you know, strong enough in my message, but the message is definitely there through the whole talk.
I'm curious about that personal observation, going back from your days as a youngster growing up on Baffin Island, I believe, and what you've seen through the years, like you said, the impact of climate change. Can you give us some of those personal observations?
Absolutely. I mean, there are many, and more, I'd say, science, as I got older and, you know, became an adult, it was easier to see the change itself. But as kids, we always had, the ice is very consistent. The polar world's very consistent. The ice freezes to the same thickness every year. And when the ice breaks up in the spring, the cracks form in the same place. The ice goes out to sea. The hunters know when they can put in their boats. And now it's just really erratic. They don't know where the cracks are going to be in the ice. It's quite dangerous. Inuit hunters have been caught on pieces of ice drifting out to sea because they didn't see it coming. But bigger scale examples are, you know, 20-some years ago, we went through the Northwest Passage in a Canadian icebreaker, and we could barely get through the ice. You know, we're pushing through ice, multi-year ice, it's 12 feet thick, smashing through this ice, trying to get through, taking this, you know, the banging and clanging on the hull all night long, and now you read that, you know, just a couple will take their, and their little dog will take their sailboat, their plastic 30-foot sailboat, and sail through that same passage just 20-some years later. And that's the type of stuff that really gets my attention. When I worked in Churchill, Manitoba, 20-some years ago, when we go out to photograph polar bears on the ice, our change had already started. But now that ice is melting a month earlier every year and freezing a month later every year in Hudson Bay, for example, and they've already seen about a 20% decline in the population of bears in Churchill, Manitoba.
One of the things that also catches me about your work, and I've got to ask about this because this is fascinating. Your dealings with, I want to make sure, leopard seals, right? That's what,
yep,
they're. You know, I saw the movie March of the Penguins, and I have to tell you, when it comes to nature, things that I've seen, I don't know if I've ever seen a more terrifying creature than a leopard seal, and yet you spent how much time with leopard seals?
Yeah, exactly. I like to change people's sort of misperceptions of these incredible creatures, and I'd like to give them a fair shake. Naturally, people as a human species, we're very scared of anything that could potentially eat us. That just lives in our conscience. And I know that, I mean, I was just swimming with killer whales and swimming with leopard seals and all these incredible animals. And so what I wanted to do was go to Antarctica and just get in the water with as many leopard seals as I possibly could, just to find out if they were misunderstood or if they really were vicious. And tragically, that scientist was killed in 2004 in the water by a leopard seal. But and then I had, you know, right away, the first seal I met was this 1,000-pound female. She was huge. And for 4 days straight, she just fed me penguins. And what she tried to nurture me. And she wasn't trying to be a mother, I don't think. She was just trying to figure out what I was doing in her ocean. And the logical thing was that I was there and I needed to eat. And so if I could accept a penguin from her, then that would make sense to her. But if you can, just imagine being force-fed salmon by a grizzly bear or seals by a polar bear. I mean, to have a top predator like that that could kill you instantly, just feed you penguins, was definitely one of the most amazing encounters I've had as a wildlife photojournalist, for sure.
And I'm wondering, obviously that's an experience you can only try to share with other people. It's not one that many people will ever have. That's an understatement. But do you feel when you have that kind of experience and you're close to these animals, like you said, these predators that most people are terrified of, you can exist with them like that. Do you feel like you get a different awareness of nature and of the world and of the universe for that matter?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's always my go-to place for, you know, my sanctuary. That's where I find peace, and that's where I find a constant world. Animals and their behavior are very constant. You know, you can trust a bear. You can trust these animals. Whereas if you go onto a highway, where I'm very scared is in cities. You put me in a car on a highway, and I don't trust other drivers. Or walking around in a city at night, I'm petrified. I just lock myself in my hotel room quite often because some people are, you know, on drugs, or some people are violent. Some people are, you know, humans are a much more inconsistent species than wildlife. But people have become disconnected from wildlife, and they read the media that there's been a shark attack or that there's been a bear attack. Meanwhile, you know, thousands of people are dying around the world in cars every day. People don't listen to that stat. They'll focus on that one stat that somebody was bitten by a bear. And that world for myself is very, very, I mean, I've seen over 3,000 polar bears in the wild. I've seen over 2,000 grizzly bears and probably 1,000 black bears over my lifetime. And I've never once had a terrifying encounter. I've had some amazing encounters. Just recently, I was sitting on a river in the Canadian Arctic, far up north, and I knew the bears were all over the place, but one night I grabbed those scotch and I went and sat down by the creek and was watching the salmon swim by. And this huge grizzly male grabbed a fish, and he came and sat about 5 feet away from me and sat down and just ate his fish. So there we were, me sipping my scotch and him eating his fish. And it's those moments like that that really just reaffirm for me why I do what I do and the urgency and the stories that I need to tell to try and protect this habitat around these species.
And maybe the final question is, and you brought up the word, the disconnect that most people have from nature. Nobody's going to be able to get the level of connection that you have, but are there suggestions that you have for people that maybe they can take that step a little bit closer and become more connected?
Absolutely. I mean, for me, it's as simple. I mean, even though I'm in the Ritz-Carlton, you know, this morning I've been out walking on the beach, listening to the pounding surf around my feet, you know, watching harbor seals sitting on a rock. You don't have to go to Antarctica or the Arctic or to, you know, on a safari in Africa. You just need to find a quiet moment in nature. You need to turn off your iPhone and your iPad and just let it fill your senses. And all of a sudden, if you get into a habit of walking in these places every day, all our senses become very dumbed down by being people of the electronic age in buildings. And if you go outside, you'll notice through time that your senses open up, the sense of smell. You start to smell things that you didn't notice before. You start to see things. You start to hear things. And it's amazing the calm and how connected you start to feel to the earth when you have those moments and you let those moments into your world. But it's very difficult when we're running ADHD from one meeting to another with our, you know, iPhones and iPads in front of us. But it's a conscious decision you have to make, but it's an incredibly rewarding journey at the end of it.
And then I will make this my final question, though I said that already. What about the folks who are intrigued and want to come down and see you? obviously there's different reasons why they will want to come down to see you, but at the same time, is there a mindset that you'd like them to bring when they come to see your show?
That's a great question. I like that a lot. I think I like what I would ideally like for people is to just come in and don't feel threatened. You sometimes people come in and they have a bit of a guard up. They're ready to take me on. And I've been, you know, speaking in Omaha, Dayton, Ohio, Salt Lake, and not once am I getting anybody offended or who wants to take me on, because I'm not putting them on the spot. You know, you're going to be incredibly entertained. You're going to laugh. You're going to cry. And then you're going to have the undertone of what's really going on with climate change in the polar regions. And from there, it's up to them what they want to do with it and go home. And I just hopefully just come with an open mind and an open heart, and don't feel defensive at all. Just let yourself be free, and we'll have a good time together.
Paul Nicklin, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it.